The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat, this is an official colonial government broadcast.
Hello there. And welcome to, I'm trying to do Mark's voice. Hello there, and welcome to a new podcast of Battlestar Galacticast. I am Trisha Helfer.
I am Mark Benarden. That was awesome.
I tried to do you. You always come in with such enthusiasm.
Hey, you do you.
Yeah, you do you. I'm faking the enthusiasm most of the time, but, you know, it's the one acting trick that I learned is how to be overly enthusiastic even when I'm not.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah. How's it going? Man, it's awesome today. Really? No.
Well, we are really excited today, and I know Alex Sarche, our lovely sound guy, is as well, even though he's never seen Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Alex
is our gauge as to whether it's a good episode or not.
I wasn't even born when that show.
He's like, I've never seen it, and I still laughed, and I found it interesting. So that's why we keep you. I mean, it sounds fine.
And I think this very distinctive voice has already given away who our guest is.
I know, because I can't do that accent.
We're very lucky to be joined by Deanna Beers, a.k.a. Lucy Lawless herself.
Hi, kids.
Hey.
G'day.
Thank you so much for coming to play with us.
It's my pleasure. This worked out beautifully.
You just flew in from Australia or New Zealand?
I've been working in Australia.
Right.
Yeah.
You just did another series there, right?
I did. I've started a new sort of era of my career. I'm in the, older woman fighting crime mode. It's kind of like the old Columbo show, but starring me as a sassy rule-breaking woman. Mm-hmm. And it's shot in beautiful Melbourne, which is such an interesting-looking town. It's full of huge mix of cultures and lots of art.
It was the street art.
The public arts. Yeah,
I just came from there and I was blown away by it.
And delicious. The cuisine's unbelievable and such a livable city, all really low rise, but and very Victorian, all the buildings, but really a kind of a terrific place to live and to shoot a show. And we're the first ones to really exploit it because TV shows in Australia typically are very, they're so afraid of parochial audiences who only like their own state, the five states of Australia. They only like stuff from their own state. So they just kind of make everything generic Australian city or suburb. And we were like, bugger that. This city is so dynamic and visually rich. We're going to use it all. And they kind of opened up the film commission and made it possible for us to shoot in the real city, which is a pain in the ass for sound. Like, you have to loop everything. Anyway,
I can imagine.
What's the show called? And B, are we going to get to watch it in the States?
Yeah, it's called My Life is Murder. And it's starting in a few, like 3 weeks in Australia and New Zealand. And I think it's on Amazon Prime or something called Acorn, whatever that is. They do a lot of things from Britain and Australia and New Zealand. Anyway, they seem to have bought that. My Life is Murder. Yeah,
that's coming soon.
Fantastic.
I like a good name. I judge a show by its name. And My Life is Murder.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Now, you said you had a story about, this is Final Cut is your first episode into Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Did you know you were going to be in the remainder of the series, or were you coming in kind of as a guest star? Did you know you were Cylon?
Well, it started way back when Dave and Ron came and said, would you play are Ty's wife. And I was like, fuck you, I didn't play somebody's wife. If that's the description of the role, it's a no. And anyway, Kate Verdon was so brilliant. It was like, I couldn't have done that better so than good. Her anyway. So I was really, it was good and right how it worked out.
Isn't that funny how that works out, right?
Yeah. She was so brilliant and brittle and strong and crazy and good. Anyway,
saucy Lady Macbeth.
Yeah. So they called me and said, okay, we want you to come on as disruptor Deanna Beers, who turns out to be a Cylon. So, yes, I knew right from the beginning. I was like, okay, I don't know what a Cylon is. It's a shiny robot with an eye going back and forth. That was my memory of it. And so they brought her in, and the role was kind of to be a disruptor. The problem is that it was very disruptive to the cast. And I realized there was – this is just my inference because you were all like super discreet and really tight and everything. But people would learn that their character was being killed off like the day it was happening. So people were on edge all the time. And I came in and there was this sort of latent kind of fingers crosses going up like, well, what is she doing here? And I was like a tiny bit offended because I'm like, I'm a good guy, you know, I'm committed to be a good guy. And I was got this weird vibe and I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go with it. I'm going to be that thing just because and see how it informs the role. Like it was really like, I'm going to be this spooky fucking Deanna Beers character. And the only problem with that is when people have when people are afraid of you or something, you're alone. And this is a really social bunch of people. Like they play together. They're very kind, lovely people. I was on the outs for a really long time and still had to walk back me. Okay, I'm not really a solo. I'm not here to take your job, whatever it was. But that was how I felt, and I don't know if that was true, but I thought it was rather unkind not to give people fair warning of how like actors are used to being killed off. Mm-hmm. We don't tell people that we're going to be killed off, but the security was so tight around the storylines on Battlestar that it was sort of an era of information paranoia that spoilers would go out and the audience would get. And maybe there's some truth to that, but
Second season it was starting to because a season had aired because the show, the cast was very warm and welcoming and we've had quite a few people come on and say about how they were just enveloped and Michael Trucco said he was just enveloped into the cast. And I do remember, I don't remember the specifics, but I do remember there had been a lot of discussion about this character. So I think everybody was maybe just a little bit like on edge
people,
of what?
Yeah, people were gave me the bit of a freeze, yeah. Including Aaron Douglas, by the way, like big time. He was really aggro, and I was like, oh fuck. Anyway, he quickly got over it, which was nice.
But I mean, it kind of feeds into the storyline in that Deanna Beers is not so much a disruptor, but she's a journalist, and she's going to be asking people. She's going to be in places people don't want her to be, asking questions they don't want to answer.
And she's just done some really hard-edged story on the Gideon and the
Gideon massacre.
The Gideon massacre. Right.
But like it seems as if, to a certain degree, that level of hostility is the wrong word, but isolation feels right for the character.
Well, that's kind of why I went for it. But I must say, as a human being, it doesn't
that sucks.
off.
Right. That sucks. That's a shitty 10 days.
Yeah, it was pretty weird.
I just realized we did not do the Previously On.
No, we didn't.
Previously On, Home Part 2.
Adama gets to flee back together.
Adama goes down to Kobol. They find the arrow followed.
Then they kill James Remar.
And they have a path to Earth that the Arrow of Apollo. The first kind of time we see some mystical elements in the show.
Yeah.
Yes. Totally. Inside the tomb of Athena. Okay. And so, now we're back to Final Cut.
We're back. And so Deanna Beers has been sort of doing some renegade journalism, and she has gotten footage of the Gideon massacre, and she's stitched into a news bulletin that's gone throughout the fleet, which has drawn the ire of some, and she finds herself pulled into Colonial One, sort of expecting to be called to task for it, but instead she's given a job.
I mean, granted, we've just gone through, the fleet's just gone through mutiny, you know, a massacre, running for their lives all this time. So what else is Deanna supposed to expect, really, aside from she's going to be either thrown in the brig or... Yeah,
especially like she gets called to the military, the same military that just killed innocent civilians.
Right.
Like, am I going to die now? Not sure. Did you?
Her dying would have had a completely different kind of value to her. She is more less afraid and more attracted to that concept. So,
I mean, it seems like today, looking back on it, it seems that Deanna Beers is kind of like the proto vice journalist, right? Like the attractive young woman who goes into war zones and reports on things and stitches it together into an easily digestible piece
like
of content.
I like that, Mark. I like that.
Yeah. But like Vice wasn't around then, so like, did you have any journalists you went to for inspiration? Like, did you, was it like Barbara Walters? Was it like even Christiana Mampour wasn't going into like awful places back then, I don't think.
Well, Christiana Mampour definitely is, you know, was known to me for a very long time, probably before this, but it was like just being me walking into this world, which is very dark. It's very concentrated, like your physical environment. I keep thinking nobody should go out into space. It is not comfortable. There's nowhere to sit. There are no plants. It's miserable. But it was my real life situation so monitored the environment that I was coming into. It was kind of perfect. So all you had to do was be there, really.
And had you worked with – I know you had worked with David Icke before on Xena. Right. He was a producer.
Started out. Yeah. He would have been on my first big job. Yeah.
Had you worked with anybody else in the cast?
No, not at all.
And I know where the credits. Fast forwards with the credits.
And her mission, know, the brief that she gets from Adama and from Roslyn is to put a human face on the officers and the crew who protect us against the Cylons and guard our freedoms every day. You know, and like not a puff piece, but a balanced story. And she's got to do it now before the fleet tears itself apart.
Which I think is very smart on their part, because it's quite often with military, and especially in a situation like this, us against them, right? The civilians don't, and similar with the police, right? With our own society right now, it's like you want them when you want them, but the other time they can be the enemy, and it's to put a face onto what they actually go through a lot of times. I'm not saying in the bad circumstances where there's a bad, you know, bad apple cop, but they forget sometimes
to humanize
what they go through on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. I think it was smart of Adama and Roslyn.
Totally. And there's something kind of interesting about like the documentary as exposition device. You know, like I'm not going to say like it's happened a lot on a bunch of shows, but I mean, The Office and like Parks and Rec, like comedy has gotten into that space. You know from the Parks and Rec, which you were on for a while. but it allows you to get these small moments that the show ordinarily wouldn't capture. You know, like the sequence on the Raptor where they're flying back to Galactica, and like, you know, it's just Adama looking at these old magazines and somebody saying, I was going to throw these away. He's like, well, you should save these. These are important.
Like real life too. Real life little moments.
Totally. Yeah. Like they're almost all just character moments. They're all just revealing little glosses and shimmies and stuff like that the show doesn't ordinarily have time for, because it's barreling plot. It's living in these massive emotional swings and these big sort of character turns, to just get these little like filigrees of like, here's a bunch of guys playing grab ass in the lockers, which you'd never see otherwise. And it does what the brief is, to humanize these people in a way that the show.
Wait, what's grab ass?
What you're about to see.
It's like that snap. That's right, because it's mixed.
The heads are all mixed. Yeah.
Oh, there they go. Yeah.
There they go. Hot dog and cat.
Plan grab ass.
Oh my gosh, it's so cute to see all these people again. And oh my god, we were so young.
I know, right? We all look like babies.
Yeah, and thirst trap Jamie Bamber. Just look at him. God, Jamie. Yes.
And there's a guy in there that you happen to catch twice. That is, he plays a part later on.
He does. He was the pilot that was put in command of the Gideon Massacre.
Yes. So he has a huge guilt trip going on.
He totally does. And he realizes that, you know, Ty, who ordered him to do that, he's a bad guy, guys.
He needs to pay.
It's
we've already seen in the episode, I think in the beginning, is there was in Ellen and Ty's quarters, mm-hmm. somebody wrote some nasty stuff on one
from
of the mirrors.
The darkness you must fall.
Yes.
Jamie, come on.
Couldn't they have given him a smaller towel?
I don't know. It's like a washcloth that he's trying to hold together with two hands.
And he's like, have you seen what you want to see? No. Vamos.
Yes. Yeah. Get out of here as soon as possible. That's pronounced ASAP.
I love how you pronounce it C-A-G and he goes, that's CAG.
What did I say?
C-A-G.
Yes. CAG. CAG. And there's also a cute little bit in there where they're talking about the thing that had been scrawled on Ty's mirror and Apollo goes to Starbuck and is like, oh, well, it's, you know, Capricorn poetry. Not that you know anything about that. And he doesn't know what the viewer knows, which is we've been to her apartment. And we know that she's like this bohemian, artsy, like pilot lady.
Yeah, in Resistance in the farm when Hilo and her go to the farm.
Right. Like it's just paints and old music and cigars. And like she lives in a world that we've never seen before. But she brings this whole like, I went to art college. And so like she's read some poetry shit. And so she gets to drop the entire verse of that Capricorn poem. And Jamie's like, I love you so much. But I can't say it yet.
But meanwhile, I'm going to like flirt with Dwala in another episode.
Yeah.
And Baltar here is doing his best to get you to notice him.
So craven. It's glorious. He's just like, what? Why aren't I on camera? I'm fancy too. I'm the vice president. We were joking last episode that at some point, last episode, next episode,
Flight of the Phoenix.
So weird, Flight of the Phoenix. That at some point we should do a cast read through, but everybody playing different characters, and the idea of Eddie playing Six would be hilarious. Just because of the amount of drapery he needs to do over whoever is playing Baltar.
I'd like to play the XO.
Yes.
Who'd you like to play?
Oh, I think James Callis is here, Baltar. Yeah.
Ooh.
Because he's such a duplicitous little bastard. I think that's right? Just so much fun.
Caesar wanted to say hi.
Yeah. Hi, Caesar. How are you?
Yes. Yeah. One of the things that broke my heart in some of these scenes is when you do the interviews with Dwala and Gaeta and things like that, and you actually see, and I think that's probably a lot what resonates with the audience mm-hmm. on the fleet, is these real people and how they got into it. And Dwala was saying like her dad didn't want to get into, you know, the military, but she got into it because she wanted to belong to something. And mm-hmm. and Gaeta's smoking all of a sudden,
smoking Gaeta was my favorite because he's like he steps out of a Fellini movie, like yeah. his collar's unbuttoned, his cigarette's like in the two fingers, like oh, it is so hard to be in the fleet. I don't understand why everybody doesn't know how much we love it. We live for this, but it's hard. It's so hard.
Wait, I want to see that.
It's so great. But it's funny because also like in this episode, all of these like down the barrel of the camera confessionals operate a bit like songs do in musicals, where like a song in a musical gets to say the things that the character would never say unless they're singing. And so in these interviews, we get things from these characters that they're saying that they would never say anywhere else. And it's fascinating to just hear Dwala talk about her relationship to the military and her father and that she never resolved that. To hear, you know, Jamie talk about, you know, like nobody understands what we go through every day with a smile on our face because it's the job. You know, we not that we deserve respect, but I think we should get some. Like it's just
their inner life shows. That's right.
Yeah. Like because they can't ever say that to anybody else but the camera. Yeah.
And then you get moments like this where Kat is losing it because she's on stims and she's just like so guilt-ridden and tired and everything because of their schedule. And you get this massive fight going on, mm-hmm. but it's also showing the pressure they're under. And And she loses it. And I think coming up is you get her on camera on the one-on-one as well. And she ends up being, you know, hospitalized over it. Yeah. And she's been on a multiple amount of stims.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just, she can't handle the pressure.
Her story here is tragic because it's, you know, I'm trying so hard and I think I'm so weak. And to compensate for that weakness, I'm doing too much and I'm going to pay for it. You know, and luckily we're not paying for it with anybody else's life, which is the backside of, oh no, you're hopped up on drugs behind the stick of a billion-dollar fighter.
Right.
That's a bad thing.
That is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But you're always there. You're always, you know, but you definitely portray somebody that's always got her, you know, a reporter that's always got her eye out for finding
listening. Yeah.
Even while you're doing one thing, you're listening and finding out, you know, something else is happening over here. And is this the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the guy that is the bad guy.
I kept wondering why the cameras are so shitty, though.
It's like, come it's not on. A Samsung 7 even.
I know. Like, you guys managed to make it to space, but you can't get a good camera.
And, you know, we have talked so many times in past episodes about how you have commented. Mm. It was one of your frack downs, actually, about how there's so many reporters reporting on, like, the small amount of stuff that's going on Galactica. And then here we go meeting a brand new one.
A brand new reporter.
That has never been in any of the situation rooms before.
And I do love.
Not situation rooms, press rooms.
I know. I do love that, like, when we're in the camera, it's letterboxed, but the edges are cut off, just like all the paper. I'm like, oh, guys, attention to detail.
Yes. It is pretty amazing that they would allow access into the CIC, though.
Yeah.
But they do. Adama does give you the one note. He's like, if there's anything that you show that compromises the safety of my ship or my crew, it will be cut. So, like, you know,
so
your hands are a little.
He gets the final edit.
He gets the final edit. And I think that's the final scene of this. You're showing it to them before it goes out to the audience. Not the audience, the crew and the fleet. And there's a few people horrified about some of the stuff that you've caught. And Adama goes, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Show it. And but he does ultimately have final say. Yes.
Also, it's not her mission to piss him off. She's undercover as this journalist who does these hard-hitting, honest, humanizing documentaries kind of thing. But really, she's a sign on getting inside. That's her mission.
I know. I love that there's that bit early on where Dualla is walking Deanna and her cameraman through, and she's talking about, like, the oxygen reclamation stuff, which seems boring as hell, but Deanna's like, get footage of that.
Like, but the camera guy doesn't.
The camera guy doesn't, but, like, Deanna's like, oh, no, this is not for the documentary. I got to pipe, schematics of Galactica back. And, like, that's sensitive and that's sensitive.
It's now in her database. Your database. Yeah. Yep.
Here I am on the flight deck. All of this is sensitive. Keep getting all this. Here I'm in the CIC. All of this is great.
That's right.
This episode does such a masterful job of hiding that ball, which is the crew doesn't like her because she's a journalist. You know, the audience kind of doesn't like her because she's invasive. But all of that is covering the fact that she's a Cylon, which should be the first thing we think when there's a new person showing up. Like, who's this new face?
You don't think it at all because
they bury it in so many other levels of antagonism, and then it becomes like, what is she going to discover that's going to get out? And then, like, she makes it when she starts getting stuff that's sensitive, and, like, then it's, will she expose the truth?
Oh my God, that is really a brilliant observation on your part, I must say. Where to hide the real issue amongst other layers of antagonism is a writing.
Oh, it's
feet, isn't it? That's like, that's brilliant.
It's perfect because it's, you're hiding in plain sight. Like, she's doing everything that you think she's doing for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
And we're tense, not because of what the truth is, but because of what
the lie. Yeah.
Because of the lie.
Yeah.
And she actually makes a fucking documentary that actually does what it's supposed to do.
Oh, now we're disarmed.
It becomes like, happy ending, you guys. Yay. We're awesome.
She's weird, but she's not that. She's not harmful.
What? She's a...
When is it, do you think, because it's not in Flight of the Phoenix and it's not in Pegasus that we see, I don't think we see you again.
It's not until.
Is it downloaded that you come back the next time? And that's when we discover that you're actually a Cylon?
Like, no, we say she's a Cylon at the end of this episode.
Oh, like, right.
That's
duh.
The reveal.
Right. Yeah.
Because you do that. We're going to jump all over the place. Yeah. But it's, you know, when she shows her final version of the documentary. And
I know I was there. I just forgot.
And Adama's like, release it to the fleet. Then you get to go around the horn of all the people watching. And then you land with Cylons watching.
Yeah, watching.
And even then, you don't know. And then the last beat of that is the push in and the face turns. See, you're like, yeah. Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We are going to take a quick break. And then we'll be back from a message from our sponsors, which I'm not sure we have, but let's pretend we do.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we're back. We apparently been sponsored by Happy Cats.
Caesar was going to announce that we're back, but he's bored now.
Yes, off with their heads.
Oh,
you humans have bored me.
Hilo giving his one-on-one speech.
Frankly, at this angle, his jaw is ridiculous. Like, right down the barrel. Like, it's just nothing but, like, right angles. Like, how is that possible in a human person?
And he's a lovely human being, too.
He really is.
Lovely man.
Yes.
He's so sweet, but, like,
yeah,
perfect in a way that's disarming and troubling, frankly.
Uncanny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we discover something's wrong here with his with Sharon.
Yes. Sharon's bleeding.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Wait. What could that mean?
Don't rub it on your face.
Yeah, I'm sure you got makeup in the background going, continuity. No, don't rub it on your face.
Also, that's all sugar. It's bad for you. Here, see, look, he's fucking Marcello Mastroianni right there. Like, his eyes are all like, he's got the smoky eye thing happening. His collar's unbuttoned. He's got his little cigarette. I don't know what that is.
The loosest we've ever seen, Gator.
Totally. Like, mostly drunk.
Yeah. And at the end, he's like, what have you discovered? That I hate cigarettes.
Yes. I don't like smoking.
You should be smoking it with it turned inside.
Yes.
The other way, like Spanish people do.
Or like in some holder. Some like
right.
Big jazz age cigarette holder.
Do you remember when you come back next? Is it downloaded?
No, Trisha, I do not remember. That sounds about right.
I remember it, nothing to do with this episode, but I remember a story and downloaded, and we were shooting kind of in that plaza, and there was Grace and James and I, and we were all like talking about, because it was the resurrection tubs. That's the time we first saw how they resurrected in that goo.
Yeah.
And I remember you were in the corner and you were reading a book. You were just kind of looking at us, making fun of us. That we were like so into figuring out how they downloaded and all this kind of stuff. And you're just like, wow, you guys take this really seriously. And
I'm sitting here thinking that right now.
But then cut to the next season and season 3 in New Caprica and everything. And you came back. And I think maybe you'd watched some episodes in between the seasons or whatever. And you came back, you're like, I don't. Get it. And you were right in there with us discovering or deciding about, like, you know, all the little intricacies that are between the lines of the page, right?
I remember that specifically, but
I love the scene where it's so good
because it's not like she's a bad journalist. No. She's a pragmatic journalist. and she knows Ty's a drunk. And that's the worst kept secret in the fleet, right? So she pours him a drink and gets him to talk. And herself one that she never takes a sip from. But every time, like, he brings the cup to his lip, it's on camera as he tells his story, as he slowly digs himself a hole with his own booze. And I'm like, yeah, no, it was totally justified. But, like, you killed those guys, right? Glug, glug, glug. I did what I was ordered to do. Glug, glug, glug.
And to his credit, a little bit late, but he figures it out and storms out. But that's also good footage of the Exo storming out and not wanting to.
That's
Deanna
right.
Shoving you aside.
Even when she loses, she wins. That's right.
It's so smart. Because then that's when the audience is like, oh, shit, is she going to put that in the documentary? Is everybody going to see that he's, like, drunk and not remorseful? Like,
yeah, because it's that rumor that goes around, but really only the crew knows that he's a bit of a drunk.
Yeah.
Does the fleet know? Maybe there's rumors, but this is, you know, this is evidence.
Totally. And, like, he doesn't have to drink. Like, he's digging himself that hole.
Mm-hmm.
She's just handing him the shovel.
I've got to say, the hair and makeup on this show is awesome. I mean, it's so great because it's so gritty and gnarly and continuity is good. I'm really impressed, actually, just watching it. I haven't been watching hair and makeup for the last few months. So awesome. So unlike other shows, you know, that mess.
Yeah. I love when you're allowed to actually look. If you're doing a show where your head, I was doing The Firm once and I was playing a lawyer, but they didn't want one piece of back hair, like their backlit and nothing. Right. I mean, it can be distracting, especially if it's a put together character.
Yeah.
But I had long hair at the time and it was such a helmet that I couldn't actually turn my head because the hair had to move as one. And I was like, guys, I'm supposed to be picking up the phone in the scene. I'm supposed to be having a conversation.
And the hair is wearing me.
And the hair is wearing me. And it's taking away from my performance. Like, screw it. Let there be a flyaway.
And you could never actually – it's a problem for Six, right? Because wearing that wig, I mean, you could never lie down, put your hands behind your heads. Or you
no.
had to protect the
I had to protect the wig. Yeah.
Every moment you're on set, you're having to watch the dress, though. That's had a bit of stretch in them. But so was it a relief for you to play? What was the name of your other character?
Gina or Sonia or
was
Natalie.
Relief? How did you enjoy that? As I mean, just because when I put on clothes, I feel different, you know, the costume. So was that a
absolutely
the experience putting on that other costume would have been lovely.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember Patricia, who did makeup, when she was making me up for Gina during the early episodes where I was beat up, she said, you're literally changed. Because I would get Six off and then they start putting Gina on. And she's like, you're literally transforming in my chair. Your body language is changing. You're
totally
getting more shrunken. Mm-hmm. You're talking less. You're getting a little bit more, you know. And I'm like, yeah, hair and makeup really... costume, everything all adds together to help change.
And having bruises and things too. I know beautiful women love to be ugly. You know, they make you up. The relaxation in that is really great. So, I love to play roles that wear comfortable modern clothing and require no input from me, no support from me.
Completely.
What was your first impression, I guess, of working with Eddie? Because you do have a couple of, like, kind of meaty scenes.
He was very warm, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was very warm and relaxed and charming. Yeah, he was good. Avuncular.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's you know, the number one on the call sheet, of which both he and Mary sort of share the honor,
right.
Sets the tone of the show,
and
right?
And he was happy to be there. Mm. Let me tell you, there are some lead actors over the age of 60 who are not always happy to get up in the morning. Mm. The man always led with love for it. So I really loved the project, and you could tell that's...
Yeah, he never complained. It was always about... If there was a complaint, it was about something specific.
Do you know how lucky we are? Yeah, it was his attitude. It was great.
This scene here, again, really important for the documentary, but that's what the episode is about, right, is showing, is this is when Kat... is, and I'm sure integral for the fleet to see, is his Kat almost crashing, losing her shit out while, and you know, she can't see straight, she's too hyped up, and the rest of them trying to get her to land safely. It's powerful to watch. And I know it's fake, but it was
like, I know you made all this
up. I know it's fake. But it's powerful to watch.
Mm. I also like that, you know, I was so much on board with the cat storyline because I, to a certain degree, know where it's going, or at least kind of vaguely remember where it's going. But this beginning of her finding that path of, like, you know, she was a nugget, she was, you know, a young pilot, and then, you know, now she's full-fledged pilot, but making horrible mistakes, and she will...
Still a rookie, really.
Still a rookie, but she will overcorrect for these mistakes later on in ways that do not do her any good, don't do her any favors. But it's always interesting to watch, like, the beginning of those storylines, and to see, again, how when actors bring it, the writers respond, which is, oh no, she's doing a thing. Like, it's pretty strong. She's more than we thought she was, and we thought she was pretty good. I mean, you know, we will talk about that with Aaron next episode. But, like, you know, there are characters who were maybe not going to survive the miniseries or the first season who did because the performance was so strong and the chemistry was so good.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear throughout the where we are so far in the series of how Hela was only supposed to be one, you know, the miniseries. Aaron was supposed to die in the first season. Mm-hmm. You know, like, throughout. And but in a show like this, as you mentioned to the in the beginning, people do die mm-hmm. as well. And yes. sometimes it's a character that you're not expecting.
And that's
because they're
why
doing
they
great
them.
Work or whatever. Yeah. Because it's you know, it used to be shows the lead characters never died. And then was it Lost or, I mean, Battlestar certainly killed off.
Yeah.
Maybe not the super, 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 super lead characters, at least in the beginning.
Yeah, but like Game of Thrones, when you kill Ned Stark in like episode 7 of the first season, like, you think that guy is the lead. Like,
well, if you had read the books, you would have known.
But they made a show.
I actually think that I think amongst producers, that mindset of kill your lead started with Stephen Bochco on Hill Street Blues, where he decided, I'm never going to have a show named after one character again because I'm sick of those actors holding me production hostage when they go, I only want to work Tuesdays and Thursdays and between these hours, you know. Then you cannot write for a show where the lead actor isn't showing up for minimum 12 hours a day, right?
Right.
Minimum. So he started it because he wanted to be able to kill off anybody and just bring somebody else in. And when you're starting a new show, you don't know who you're going to cast. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes you cast somebody you think is great and they turn out to be a, you know, pig with lipstick. Mm. And no one in particular. It was that poster on your wall. It's getting in my psyche. There's a pig on the wall in front of me flying. Yeah, I think that's where that started because my husband noted that.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me that, like, people who came up in the, like, Scarecrow and Mrs. King and Jake and the Fat Man and, like, Ironsides and, like, yeah, the show's named after the lead character. Like, God damn it, can we – son of a bitch, I guess we're riding out with this guy.
Okay, so this is our age where we know who Ironsides is, which was – I can't remember the name of that actor, but the character was in a wheelchair. Was that actor actually in a wheelchair?
No.
Wouldn't that be a pain in the ass not ever able to get up off the damn chair?
When they remade it like 5 years ago with Blair Underwood playing Ironside.
Didn't they?
It lasted like half a season because it turned out nobody wanted to see Blair Underwood in a wheelchair. The beautiful man? Like, maybe let him stretch out a little bit. Yeah, come on, let him stride. He's got that L.A. Law strut. Nope, in a wheelchair.
I did, talking about wheelchairs. I just paused this because I want to talk about this one scene here. But talking about wheelchairs, Ryan Robbins, who was also in Battlestar Galactica, played the armistice officer in the very opening scene where the armistice station is blown up, and also comes back as Connor in later episodes, and because he was made up to look like an old man. But he was telling me that he guested on a show, a medical show. I can't remember the name of it right now, and I'm not going to plug it. But I can't remember the name of it. But it was to play, and he was playing a real person. And the real person was in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. And so they were really trying to cast somebody in a wheelchair. And Ryan went into the audition. And he had really studied, I think he said he had an uncle or something that was in a wheelchair, and he really studied a lot of the stuff that they can, you know, do well. Yeah. If you've been in a wheelchair for a long time, you know, if you're first in one, it's completely foreign. Mm. And they cast him in it. And he said he stayed in for the entire 2 weeks or two weeks of filming, whatever it was. He stayed in the wheelchair the entire time. And I'm sure there were moments he got out, like if he was a self-drive and, you know, but the second, if nobody was around and saw him, he was, anytime anybody saw him, he was in a wheelchair. Even at home, he said he stayed and went to the grocery store, everything. He said there was one scene toward the end of filming that he was supposed to be in bed. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to make the crew lift me into bed. I'll just get up and get into the bed, right? Save some crew members' backs. And he said he stood up and got into the bed and half the crew dropped whatever they were like there were some grips with some lights in their hands and the lights crashed to the floor. They're like, what you just, they thought he was that. And that was to me, him, that was the biggest compliment is they didn't know.
That is a remarkable commitment, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder if he'd do that again.
Yeah.
Because that's quite taxing.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for him.
So back to Battlestar. I paused this here because Deanna's had pretty free reign. Been kicked out of the head once, all the towels were around, which I think is somewhat fair if everybody's getting naked and changing. But there's one scene that Adama takes the tape out.
Yeah.
And it's when you see that there's a Cylon, because Sharon has almost lost her baby. So she is in the medical bay to be monitored by Doc Cottle. And Adama sees that you have caught that they have a Cylon prisoner.
Yeah, and because she's following Kat into the sick bay.
Right, who's just lost it on her landing.
Bloody nose, and she's spinning out of control. And so the camera follows Kat, and then just kind of peeks in and sees,
whoa.
Oh shit, is that a bloody Sharon? It was a little bloody.
But we see that you have a second copy.
Secreted away.
In the bra, because
she's so bad.
That's where women hide things.
And look at the ancient technology she's using.
I know.
Do you know what I had in my bra this morning?
Tell us, Tricia.
I ran I finished my floss, floss tube.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was upstairs. I'm like, I have my hands full. I just shoved it in my bra to carry it downstairs to put in the recycling. I got on the treadmill an hour later. I was like, what's in my bra? I saw the floss tube in my bra. Anyway,
I feel like this should be a recurring segment.
What's in Trisha's bra?
What's in the bra?
Cat's looking at you.
This is crazy.
So, I lost my train of thought. I'm now whispering over Baltar's shoulder, which happens a lot.
Yeah, as you do.
Yeah. Oh, you're interviewing Baltar here. That's what it is.
Yes,
I think.
Which is the best interview because it never really happens. It's
and
so
he
perfect.
Is so pissed.
I know. He's just ready to it's time for you to make the case for you to be in command, that you're the man to be leading the fleet, get after it, and then alarms blare because there's a couple Cylons inbound.
Yes.
And we're like, we don't give a shit about this guy with the good hair. Let's go find out what that's all about.
He's like, already. And the second that the Cylons blare right there.
Yep. There it is. He's so manspready there, too. Like, why is he sitting so funky?
Because he's a funky little dude.
He's a weird, odd little man.
He's like, damn it.
What about me? I'm important, too.
See this environment here where they're running through the corridors. Mm. It's like there was never anywhere to sit that was remotely comfortable. It's like it was the most inhospitable set. Just,
And did you get lost constantly?
I had no idea where I was. Yeah.
It took me a good probably into the second season before an AD had to lead me out after a scene. You'd call lunch and you'd be like, please, don't leave me. I'm going to miss lunch. I'm going to be wandering around these corridors trying to find my way out of the maze.
That's right.
Somebody bring me an apple. I can't leave.
Yeah. And it's fascinating watching them. I get the chills just watching them get ready to launch out. It's you did a really good job here being a Cylon, actually looking like you were really taken in by the thrill of it all, the emotion, the stress, the anxiety, everything.
Well, she had to have been thrilled to be inside to be watching it. Right?
Mm. Yeah.
Like Oh my God.
Yeah.
Amazing.
But I would have never guessed you were Cylon. And everybody, like we touched on this earlier. You're like, does it ever get easier?
No,
never does. But you know, at this point, the audience is probably guessing anytime somebody comes in that it's a Cylon and not a
disarmed right from the jump.
Brilliant.
And it's so smart that this scene is done entirely from the camera's perspective, from Deanna's and her cameraman's perspective. So you're experiencing this Cylon attack purely by audio, purely by reaction shots of these people to the events that's happening.
Yeah.
We are never in space. Like we don't even see any of that stuff. And so we're seeing the tension of it and the waiting of it and the silence of it and the
especially using your ears in that way as radar. Right,
totally. And she's just like sprinting, frenetic, all over, getting this guy, that shot, like laying on her back, getting that guy.
It's almost done because the show is shot documentary style anyway. So to be shooting a documentary in a show that's shot documentary style, it's like a double documentary.
Totally, and it adds this different layer, this sheen of verite that it didn't quite have before. Even though it's super fucking verite most of the time.
What does verite mean?
Cinema verite.
Yeah. I wonder how many people got dizzy. I heard some people used to get dizzy watching.
Yeah, it's possible, especially here, which is whipping all over the place. But the angle we've never really seen before is the deck, is the guys on the crew who are waiting to see what happens. Like, are we going to have to repair a ship? Are we going to have to, you know, pull bodies out of a cockpit? Are we going to have to, like...
It's kind of like T minus 22 minutes, right? So there's a big countdown to cataclysm.
Right.
That's the feeling you have with this episode.
It's either going to be fine and everybody's going to come home, or it's going to be disaster and we don't have any more ships and we're going to lose pilots and we're going to lose friends. And that pins and needles waiting of it.
When do they go to the Algae planet? At some point, everybody was super hungry and eating slime or something, like just to add more tension and more stakes for the characters.
Totally. There's always something fucking happening. There's always something going wrong.
Sorry, it's my fault. We lost picture there for a second.
No, it's all right.
My technological abilities are not very good.
I have to say, just of all the crew, the sets I've ever been on, this is such a big cast, but it was actually composed of super lovely human beings.
Mm.
And I'm pretty good everywhere, but to have so many people who are so kind and good is pretty remarkable.
And to be passionate about the show. Nobody phoned it in. Nobody, you know, and like you said, probably stemming from Eddie and Mary.
Yeah. Both of them, they're great leaders, morale leaders, you know.
Now, I think you're the one that figures out who the bad guy is.
Yeah.
Because you notice here, you notice what he's reading, and that's what was scrawled on the mirror.
Mm-hmm. Like, is that a book about Capricorn poetry by that guy? What? Run, 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 run.
Run, 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 run.
Oh, and Ty. Ty is finally being called to answer for his war crimes.
Oh,
such valuable booze.
Oh.
Hit him right in the junk with the bottle, too.
Oh, he did, too.
Yeah. We can take a little pause. Have you seen the clip that's been spinning online of, I think
Michelle Obama?
Michelle Obama.
And Harry Styles.
Like, I lived my entire life and didn't think I'd see Michelle Obama hit Harry Styles in the nuts with a dodgeball. But here we are. Because God works in mysterious ways.
Well, he even jumped upwards, spread his legs, and that ball just whammed right. And she has an arm.
She's not fucking around. And so the fact that we now live in a world that is something we've all seen. And if you haven't seen it, it's worth watching.
I have not. I'll look it up.
47 times. Because it's pretty great. Speaking of Nat shots, thanks, First Lady.
Right.
You know what's quite interesting watching this back now is you were mentioning the technology or the letterboxing with that curious shape, which is kind of a motif in the set design generally, I think. But it's just interesting to see how it's aged. isn't it? And some of it is sort of Cronenberg-esque, where he, you know, creates the future by subtraction because he can't afford fancy right. environments. So it's about subtraction. So it's interesting what's not there. You know, there's no clocks. There's no. And yeah. finally, being on set, you never knew what time it was anyway, because it was, you come to work, it's bloody dark. Inside, you're in space, so it's dark. You go out,
it's dark.
It's dark.
Well, film, no camera or no clocks around is probably done on purpose, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because they all have to be on the same time. So it takes
nightmarish
for set and continuity, because anytime there's a watch on set, you're like, what time does the watch have to be? If your hand is anywhere in frame, it's got to be on the right time per the script.
I didn't even think
of
that.
So if you have too many clocks around in the background, lo and behold, people are going to point out, well, that clock's not at the same time as that clock.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you can't re-edit, you know, scenes in different orders. Yeah. Right. I mean, that's right. Yes. I didn't think about the technical aspect
of it. I know,
you
know. You want what you can't have.
Caesar just keeps loving up on Mark, and he's allergic, so.
Because he knows.
We are now at the watching of.
Yeah.
And like, Ty is horrified.
Ty thinks it's the worst thing he's ever seen. We're just showing our asses to the fleet. That's my Ty impersonation.
Michael is probably the least like his character than anybody on the show. He's such a goofy, sweet Hogan.
I know.
Such a sweet goofball.
Although he does have that laugh. I can't even do it. I can't do that. He does do that. But he's such an amazing, artistic, sweet soul. And he plays this. Hard-assed.
And Mary had a really big effect on my life. She introduced me to this spiritual speaker, I guess. His name's Anthony DeMello, and he was a Catholic priest who born in India, very Indian, and he sort of lectures on mysticism. And I got listening to it because of her, and it was just such a life-changing influence. Anyway, he died in mysterious circumstances, and the chap who later became the Pope, that hideous Ratzinger, had tried to excommunicate him for being too open to other faiths sometime before. So anyway, Mary done me a big solid.
Did not know that. Mary, 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 Mary. Love Mary.
Love, everybody loves Mary.
That's a...
Family
oh, there's
Mary.
Something about Mary.
Everybody loves Raymond.
I was confusing the two.
We're getting there. But yeah, and so this is the documentary. This is the Here's Who the Fleet Is, warts and all, which is why Adama agreed to release it. He thinks it's great. Like, let everybody see this. We should all see.
And as Deanna, you were surprised by that, right? Deanna was surprised that Eddie was fine to Eddie.
Eddie liked it.
Commander.
Yeah. The commander liked it.
It would have surprised you, but even if he didn't, it'd be like, no problem, we'll retool it, because her mission is not the documentary.
Yeah. She can
so
care less.
Whatever makes him happy puts her in a position of power, cements her position.
But it is powerful watching everybody watch themselves, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure everyone has their moments of embarrassment, of pride, of you know, sadness, seeing the wall and all, everyone that they've lost and everybody else's, you know, triumph and just sadness and loss. It's interesting to see everybody's faces.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we've got to get back to work. This is the job. But watch it. Come and watch us. We're awesome, says Chief.
Another thing I thought about being out in space while sitting on a set, very much like the one we're looking at, just in a corridor on some horrible cargo container, which doubles as a sofa in galactic land, was that in space, nothing can be wasted. Mm-hmm. Like, I realized you would never throw somebody out the airlock just because you hate them, because you might need them for something, even just to eat them. Mm-hmm. You don't throw good organic matter out the airlock when you're – anyway – just gets you thinking about the reality of being living in space permanently.
Yeah. And here's the big reveal that the last people we see watching the documentary.
Six Durrell, Boomer, or Sharon.
Yes.
And watching it.
And there's another head there. Another blonde head. Dirty blonde, really. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The baby's
alive. I don't know what I was horrified about there.
it's like
I had a moment of like, no, look how hilarious. Because you didn't see the smile coming, right?
Right.
She's alive. I'm alive. It's alive.
Oh, it's the baby. I see. We're listening to it on mute, but that's about the baby. Yes. That's when we see the Sharon. And I'm like, it's she's losing the baby.
Where's the edge? Oh, my God. You got a baby.
Oh,
so good.
Yeah. And that one. Who directed this episode?
That was...
The Australian guy.
Robert Young.
Oh, Robert Young. The heavenly Robert Young.
Yes.
Yeah, written by Mark Verheiden, directed by Robert Young.
Yes. And there we have it.
And produced by Harvey Friend.
Yes.
The loveliest man in the world.
Harvey Friend.
Yeah. Mm.
We all love to be
so sad about that.
Mm. Yes.
So, yeah, that's a final cut.
Wow, you guys are really good at this.
Oh,
so you're going to make all those hardcore fans so happy.
It is the most fun I get to have any given week, is to sit down and talk about a show that I love.
Wow.
Yeah. Even episodes that I don't love that much.
Which we know so far which one it was.
There's the one. We're going to get...
And what was it that you didn't like about it?
It
was Colonial Day, right?
It was Colonial Day.
Was it down on Caprica?
It was on Cloud Nine.
It was on Cloud Nine. It was like the big, like, political... We're having debates and the press is involved and there's a...
They decide there has to be a... Tom Zarek is front and center and they decide they have to... have a vice president. And so there's the lead up to choosing a vice president.
So was the problem that it wasn't about Galactica, the usual suspect? Did it go off?
It felt off mission in a way, you know, like it just drifted away from what felt like what the show was about. And then to a certain degree, the things that we love about the show. This is a show that is incredibly elastic in ways that some shows aren't. So it can be about so many things. Like it was about survival. Then it's about finding reasons to live. And then it'll be about finding a new home. And then it'll be about torture and all of that stuff. But that one episode, at least in that first season, was... And it's not even like it's bad. It's just not as good as the rest were.
Well, so it had come off of like, I can't remember the one before, but it had come off of like a high energy one. And then the one after was high energy. And then all of a sudden this one was like... And we're going to be in, like, the Senate, basically.
Right. Like, it's a little...
But necessary in terms of where the story's going, but it just had this lull to it.
Yeah. You know, and, like, it's not even that it was lightweight, because Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down is also, like, a romp. It's a farce in a way, where, like, oh, it's Ty's wife, and she's weird and crazy, and she's coming back to the fleet. And
that's when Ellen Ty's first introduced.
Yeah, and, like, you know, and there's a bunch of comedy where she's trying to hit on Jamie, and, like, and it's light and fun in a way that... That still works for the characters, but yeah, Colonial Day was a little bit of a like, what is, I mean, sure, I guess, but and then we'll get to Black Market, which is a whole nother thing.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna let you bring it up.
That's a whole nother thing.
We got to try and get, you wanted Bamber from France on that one.
I don't know if that's the one I want to like pull the Jamie card on. It's like, hey, man.
We can get the writer.
Yes. Welcome aboard to the podcast. Writer. Let's talk about the shittiest episode of Battlestar, Jamie.
La la.
Hey, we did, what, 78 episodes. There's got to be one or two.
You know, not everyone's going to be a writer. Right. But the batting average is higher than most.
And sometimes I don't know that this was a reality in the episodes that you're talking about. Sometimes you go, holy cow, we chewed up the budget on that episode. Mm-hmm. We've got to make something that's situated in one room and just like a bottle show or something that has flashbacks. You know, you do have
sometimes
to
you gotta.
Budget-wise.
Yeah. You see first drafts of it and you're like, oh, we're going to be on the rooftop taking off of a helicopter. And then in reality, like that was in my Van Helsing episode. And then I can't really say it, but I'm going to say it. And then I get there and no, I'm on a little hydraulic lift with green screen behind me.
Yeah, like, no.
No, you're going to be added in. Your face is going to be added into the window of the CGI.
Yeah, it was helicopter. Supposed to be a helicopter. Now it's an Uber. Like you're just getting in an Uber, just driving away. Escape.
Yes.
Okay. What was your favorite or least favorite, the Frackdown moment, which is what did you love about the episode? What stood out the most to you, be it good, be it bad? I will go first because I know what mine is.
Okay. What was your Frackdown?
Mine is raving, stark, lunatic Kat. Like, I think the escalation of her story, like when she gets out of that cockpit and when she's just losing her mind, it's so easy for that to go badly. It's so easy for that to be too much. It needs to be big, but not so big that it becomes laughable. And I think they found that line of making her spinning totally out of control, tragic in what could have been laughable. So, yeah, Kat losing her rockets.
That was going to be mine.
That's why I went first.
I mean, elements around it, that was going to be mine in terms of the whole, so which I'll veer mine off to being the documentary within a documentary. I like the aspect of it and in not necessarily the entire thing, but in elements like watching Starbuck trying and Apollo trying to talk her down to get her to land safely, flying down those stairs to greet and get her out of the cockpit, the entire crew coming together to, you know, just it when action hits, everybody knows their place and it and everybody falls into place. So having that scene that we have seen in other episodes, because it's a show about military in space and fighting robots, but to see it from a different perspective, and then have that being shown to the fleet. So the documentary within a documentary, especially in moments like that, is my Frackdown.
Cool. Do you have a thing?
Well, because I really work for the sensation of, you know, I just remember things from the sensation of it. So the worst thing was that the space is really uncomfortable. There is nowhere to sit. I think we did have chairs and things, so it's not like there really wasn't. But most places have a bed or, you know, real furniture that you can sort of sneak, you know, get onto. But my favorite thing was that knowing that my character was a Cylon, it that life and art were really fused at that moment. Yeah, it was a lovely, really interesting experience that I would never choose to repeat. Yeah, being a little bit method sometimes it can hurt you. Yeah,
coming in knowing you're a Cylon, and but also
and being having slightly antagonistic, being, you know,
being antagonistic, and then coming into that, so letting it mirror a little bit. Was it? Do you remember in the script if that final scene was actually in there?
It might not have been, but
because if it was like an addendum that was added,
yes, they would hold things off. You're right, and it wouldn't even be on the schedule, but it was
on the schedule and all the script.
They were super, super secret squirrel about everything, and I guess it paid off because it did make this great show, but I think it kept the cast a little bit off balance, which meant that they weren't as relaxed as they could be. And again, that fed into what you got on the screen. That's why it's so great.
Yeah.
Because people are uncomfortable. It's dark. They're just a tiny bit paranoid. It makes them very close, which is lovely, like socially. But it created an unreal world, which is why you get so much verity in their performances.
That leads me into, there's a little bit of a spoiler here, but into the episodes where Starbuck is gone. The entire cast thought she was gone for good. You're talking about keeping, you know, producers keeping it close to the chest or vest or whatever it is. Eddie was pissed when he found out that she was actually coming back. I mean, she was taken off the credits. She was taken off everybody. We all had goodbye parties for her. And lo and behold, she's back. And it was all a ruse. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly right. Keeping everybody a little off balance and them not really knowing it. I feel as a producer myself, I wouldn't do that to my cast. But like, I think that's
dick it's move, shows. Right? It's a bit of a dick move.
No, but look, it shows in the product, right?
I know. Pain is temporary. Film is forever, right?
Yeah. They had a good time. They really did.
Yeah. We did.
All right. So tell the people where they can find you out in the world. My name is Murder.
My life is murder. Yeah, I've been doing this show in Australia, and it is on Now it's been bought by Acorn Television, which I think is on Amazon Prime, but, and it'll be, oh shit, this isn't going up for a while, right?
Yeah. Tuesday.
Oh, I don't. Okay, then I don't know when it's coming to America.
Hopefully, eventually it will be.
Hopefully, eventually before the end of August, but I cannot be sure. But wow, this has been really, what a treat. Thank you
so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for joining. Yay. Especially after you've just flown in.
No, I've got nothing else to do. Perfect. Now I've got done my yoga, done a podcast with you guys.
Look at you. It's Miller time.
I'm going to go take care of the laundry. Yeah. Find a fluff and fold.
You should have brought it here. We could have run it while we were going on.
I wasn't thinking.
I'm running to acupuncture.
Mm. Gorgeous.
I'm going nowhere. I'm going to pack.
You're going to go pack.
I'm going to fly to New York.
Fly
tonight.
To New York in the red eye.
Yes, because I'm.
Well, happy travels.
I do not expect them to be happy.
Happy travels.
They really
to
are.
You. What's that song?
Trails.
You got it again. What are you doing in New York?
I'm going to go see a friend of mine wrote a show, so I'm going to go see his show.
Amazing.
Because one supports one's friends when they can, especially when they're gainfully employed.
I could go to New York
for a weekend. And then my family's still back there. So I'll, catch up with my mom and dad and see my brother and his new baby and eat good pizza and bagels, even though I shouldn't do either. But yeah, it'll be fun. And then I'm back on Monday, going to work like a schmuck.
We all gotta do it.
But that has been another episode of the Battlestar Galacticast. Thank you so much, Lucy Lawrence, for coming to play with us.
Wrong.
It's all right. We'll make that a ringtone.
All right, my friends.
Thank you to Alex Sarchet, our man on the one and twos. Thank you to Bear McCreary for giving us an amazing theme song, which we were always so happy to get to play for you. And thank you, Trisha Helfer.
Thank you. And thank you to Sci-Fi Wire.
Thank you to Sci-Fi Wire. And we will see you guys next week with Flight of the Phoenix.
With another guest
who we probably told you already who it is, because we're living in the backwards world.
Yes. We'll be back to forwards world soon.
Totally. So fly safe. Happy good hunting.